Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence, a book intended to awaken others to recognizing their energetic and physical dual natures in order to bring a clearer view of life and its many divine possibilities. This radio show, heard on webtalkradio.net, welcomes guests who approach healing and wellness in their relationship to reaching higher consciousness and the development of a more humane and evolved personal and universal reality. Going beyond the limitations of our mind reality opens the door for a holistic and healthy integration of mind, body, and soul, for understanding the oneness and unity of all life. Joining us today is my special guest, Dr. Henry Grayson, author of his newest book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. Hello, Dr. Grayson.
Hi. Welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
And I'm glad to be with you, too. Now, let me just tell our listeners a little bit about you. Dr. Grayson is a psychologist and psychoanalyst and the founder of the National Institute for the Psychotherapies in New York. And he is also the founder and director of the Institute for Spirituality, Science, and Psychotherapy. He has studied neuropsychology, the major psychotherapies, the new power therapies, and quantum physics, and also Eastern and Western philosophies. You know, Henry, I have interviewed many people in the course of this show who have been exploring issues relative to the questions many of us have about who we are and the origins of life, and also the possibilities for spiritual communication from higher energy sources. And my ultimate purpose has been to discover and share a truer vision and view of healing, which is only possible by integrating science, philosophy, energy medicine, spirituality, and also an acknowledgement of the dynamic nature of our soul and our ego being. And is that so?
That's it.
Okay, but I am delighted to say your book clearly brings together medical history plus a spiritual rendering of recognizing the interconnectedness to all, and also, which is really quite needed, a functional plan for how to integrate the old and new theories of healing so we can assist people to bring the body and mind into balance. And the result can be a more positive life experience. And what does it all begin with? I believe it begins with ridding the body and mind of deep buried impressions and traumas that often create disease and unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
Henry, let's go back and bring in a little science here. Can we begin by talking about some of the doctors and scientists who laid the foundation for modern medicine and healing and who offered several different views about the material world and the quantum worldview? I know you speak about in your book, because I've read the book quite carefully, Louis Pasteur, Claude Bernard, Isaac Newton, and a more modern molecular biologist, Bruce Lipton. Can you tell us something about how they have contributed to an understanding of ways to see healing in the best light?
Well, we have to say that what's useful about their approaches is their recognition that there's something more than the world that's just at the quantum, at the Newtonian level.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the old Newtonian worldview, which is what so much of modern medicine is still based upon, the 350-year-old science of Isaac Newton, where the only thing that was real is what you can observe and experience with the five senses and measure. And if you knew enough about the past, you could predict the future. In a sense, we're just cogs in a machine, according to that viewpoint. And we're just sort of locked in with no free will and no power of choice to speak of. And I think what each of these others have done is to recognize that there's another role that's involved here, and that's the role of consciousness. And that's where quantum physics, I think, has influenced at least the latter ones. Not so much the Claude Bernard and the other ones from way back. They just had some awareness that there was something more. But the more recent ones, I think, have drawn more from a quantum worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And the recognition that all mind is all interconnected, and it's really consciousness that's most powerful in affecting the cells.
Well, I believe that there's very little in our environment that can affect us if we have the right state of mind and we project the right attitudes and values. It's like Louis Pasteur. He believed that the body was a sterile machine, and then germs and bacteria and viruses could create the imbalance. But that's not the whole picture. In your book, you talk about doctors during the bubonic plague and nurses who had to attend to the people. And while a third, or maybe two-thirds, I think it was a third of the people died at that time, many of the doctors and healthcare people didn't. Can you tell us why that? Yeah.
They stayed healthy, and I think because they were in a state of active care and compassion for people.
Mm-hmm. So they were reacting from their inner soul energy and connecting and aligning to higher energy. So their thoughts were not on getting sick. Because, you know, of course, if we think we're going to catch a cold or we're going to get sick, we're projecting that intention in reality, and we're almost calling it to ourselves. And
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, well, we're doing that. Because the old saying, what you focus on is what you'll get, is very true here.
Yes. And so the new view... The old view was little choice and limitations, but the new view of energy healers, and I am a Reiki practitioner, is that we have to transcend this limited state of powerlessness and giving power to forces outside ourselves. And we have to break down those barriers within our experiences, which have created some of the symptoms in the body, to open to the field of universal knowledge and an infinite power to heal. Mm-hmm. So I know you describe the unified field or invisible realm, which everything is part of. Can you explain that field to our listeners?
Well, basically, when we crushed atoms, we used to think that, you know, we were taught in school, those little diagrams teachers would put on the chalkboard of the electron, proton, and neutron. It looked like little planets revolving around the sun. They used to think that that was something like matter in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now when the scientists crush the atom, they find there's nothing there but a spark of energy.
Ah,
which
spark
means
of energy.
That's
oh.
all that's there. There's not really something that's called, that is matter. And then what physicists say further is that at the quanta level, which is 10,000 to 20, 30, 40,000 times smaller than the smallest atom, that matter and energy at that level are virtually indistinguishable. And what seems to make the difference, and this is what is so profound from the physicist, that it seems to be consciousness that determines whether it slows down the vibrational level enough to be what we perceive as matter. That means that the part that really rules is consciousness.
Absolutely.
And that mm-hmm. if what's in our bodies is affected by consciousness, or what's going on in our minds, and I say consciousness, it includes messages from our unconscious mind too. Because it's constantly sending messages to all the cells as well as what we are consciously thinking about. But I think what the physicists mean by consciousness is something much greater than just the material world. And that there's another dimension of energy and information that's having an effect. For example, we know you can take some DNA and put it in a Petri dish. And you can have people around it thinking thoughts of anger or fear or worry or things like that. And literally, that DNA will shrivel up and shrink and tighten itself into a little wad.
Oh, that reminds me of Dr. Emoto, who did experiments with water. He put
mm-hmm.
containers of water, and
right.
then under some he put words, very negative words, hateful words, destructive
mm-hmm.
words, and under others he played beautiful music and beautiful tones and words. And when they studied the molecular structure, the positive molecules made these beautiful designs, and the negative ones made cancer-like designs.
Grotesque figures, yes.
Yes, yes. So we're affected by all thought and all energy. And by the way, we know energy can never be destroyed. So all these impulses of our heart and our mind and our gut, which is connected also to incoming information from this energy field
mm-hmm.
beyond our five senses, cannot be destroyed. And
mm-hmm.
we need this correct way of seeing ourselves as both human and energy beings. Now, this is important to me because I know that many doctors still do not understand how to address some serious illnesses and how to talk to their patients when some serious things happen, because they've not been trained this way.
What they've been trained primarily to do is that linear approach.
Right.
That it's just sort of like you need to do something to zap the symptom, you know, you need to do something to destroy the cancer cells or whatever, but they never attend to why is it the cancer cells multiply more in this person than in another.
Exactly. And
because we all have some all the time.
I'm aware of that, Jess. And also sometimes when there's a prognosis, if we approach it one way, it will go to terminating that person, and if we approach it another way, the person can go into remission. So you discussed that when doctors are asked for a prognosis, that there might be ways to create a better outcome, even with a serious illness. Can you explain that?
Well, certainly, rather than just making a prognosis that's based on just a linear understanding of the past and how that's going to be repeated in the future, it'd be helpful if they ask a person, have you had serious traumas in your life, in your adult life, that might have triggered this? Did you have a childhood in which there were a lot of painful experiences? Because there's a high correlation between unclear childhood traumas and the onset of serious illnesses, often in early adult life. There's a clear onset, you know, of a small illness within a day or two, or even sometimes a few hours after a major upset in our adult lives, and often a serious illness within a year or two following. And so there's this high correlation in that way. And in addition to that comes our belief system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I believe I deserve health? Do I believe I'm worthy of it? Do I believe that I have to lose something by being healthy? I'll lose love and attention that I can get by being sick. Do I lose a freedom of choice to change my career or something that I'm unhappy with? You know, the highest rate of heart attacks comes at 9 a.m. on Monday mornings for people who hate to go back to their job that they really dislike.
I read recently it's a good idea to drink a glass of water before going to sleep, because many heart attacks happen in the early morning because people have anxiety about waking up and going through a day facing situations that have not been resolved.
Yes.
And they
exactly.
have so much fear. So we want to help people get rid of these negative thoughts, clear these limiting beliefs, and rid themselves
clear out these
of
traumas.
The traumas, and to start bringing in some changes in their life, more joy, more smiles, more positive interactions with people. And this is what the doctors need to also help people do. They need to know their people personally. They need to not just give, I believe, this is my belief, not just give a diagnosis and a prognosis, but to give an encouraging way to find alternative healers and people who will work with them in a way to find out more about who they are.
Well, it's not just a body part to be fixed.
Right.
Because the body part is simply the manifestation of a lot more that's gone on inside the person and in their lives. And that's the part that needs to be attended to, because for traumas, for example, it stays with us because it's just encoded information in the survival brain.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's there is information that makes us perceive things as dangerous now that were like the past thing that upset us. And when we do that, that means we keep pouring out the cortisol and other stress hormones.
Yes.
And as we do that, we reduce the immune system and make it weaker. And because we take away blood flow from the stomach, which means it won't process the food and get the nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole vicious cycle gets going, and the doctors aren't really attending to that piece. Even though they say that 80% of the symptoms that go to primary care physicians are stress-related, what is not really dealt with except to say, here's a pill, you know, a tranquilizer to make you feel a little bit better and not feel as anxious. But it doesn't get to the cause.
No, it's just a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
But, Henry, in order to eliminate the mental obstacles that make us feel unworthy of having good health and prosperity, you offer 6 questions that you ask your patients or clients and family members and friends to ask themselves when they experience symptoms of an illness. And these answers can often change the whole course of events. Can you give us some idea of this technique?
Well, what they are questions I've learned to ask myself for self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that when I get the answers to these questions and find an alternative way of dealing with them, the symptom most often goes away. But the symptoms, I won't take the time to go on how I came about this, but first one is, why might I need this symptom or this sickness right now?
Mm-hmm.
What would it get for me? What would it get me out of doing? Is the third one. What metaphor might be expressed in this sickness or this symptom? What emotion might be expressed in it that is not being attended to constructively or consciously? And then the last one is, what kind of family belief or tribal belief is being expressed in it? Like, do I believe, for example, because the latest bug's going around, I have to catch it because somebody sneezed on me?
Right. That's what we started with talking about at the beginning. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
If you think it to be true, it will be true for you. And if people taught you to believe these things, you're just not going to go beyond it. So we need to help people see where it's coming from, how it's been buried, how they've been trained and misguided, sometimes by loving parents and sometimes by teachers and sometimes by friends who just didn't know better.
And also by the media.
And, oh, the media, big thing. Now, you give a few examples, like, for example, you say back-breaking pain or neck pain can reflect a problem. Who's the pain in the neck in your life right now? Who might you have?
What's the back-breaking burden I'm carrying? Or what's the anger I'm stuffing down?
Right.
You know, all
stomach
those kind
upset
of things
are always a reflection of more than what we've eaten or the bug or germ that's around us, but it's about our life and how we're perceiving what we want to do with our life and our life plan, because we are here. We do have a purpose in being here, I believe. And sometimes we lose track of that because we're focusing too much on other people and other events rather than listening from what's coming within. Now, isn't that so?
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah. And
of course it is.
For some people, it's a hard cycle to break, but it can be changed, and it must be changed for people to be really healthy. Now, Henry, you tell us about a serious back problem that you had 25 years ago and how it was handled without surgery. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure, because it was kind of a pivotal time for me. I'd been using these questions to keep myself from getting recurring colds that I used to get. Then when I had continuing developing serious back problem that was quite debilitating, it got to the point that I could not move a centimeter in bed without feeling like I was being jabbed with an ice pick and then shocked with electrodes.
Oh.
And the x-ray showed, the doctor said that I had a severely degenerated disc with loud extreme nerve involvement, and they thought I would not walk again without back surgery. And at that time, I knew that back surgery, you were about 68% of the time, you were worse off after the back surgery. And I thought, those aren't good odds.
Yeah, they are doing much more than they need to with that. And it's been in every publication that I read.
Yeah, and it's still not the most desirable way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I thought is, well, I'm successful in being able to stop myself from getting the customary three or four colds I used to get every winter. And if I was successful with that, maybe it could work here. And so I started asking myself those series of questions. Why might I need it? What would it get me out of? What would it get for me? What would emotions being expressed in it, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with several things to deal with. There was an issue with one person I'd felt betrayed by, and so I was hurt and angry.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another person I had another issue with that I needed to talk out. I'd never discussed it openly with that person and resolved it. And then I found that I had a tendency not to do that directly, and I'd been stuffing a lot of things down characteristically through the years, and I needed to deal with that. And I found I needed to make some lifestyle changes as well. I'd been an athlete and done a lot of athletics, but I never stretched, so that was not good. And I realized I had no way of dealing with tension and stress in my life. And I realized that to do a regular practice of yoga and meditation would help with that as well. And so I made a firm commitment to myself that I knew I would keep about how I was going to attend to each of those issues.
And you did. You
did
stretching, running, meditation, working out relationship problems. And you never did have that surgery, did you?
Well, 2 months later, I was skiing in Colorado.
And then I discovered that
I was pain-free for many years. And then about 6 or 8 years ago, I was in for a routine physical exam, which I go to not to find out what's wrong, but to prove how healthy I am, because I want that attitude coming out of it, not fear.
Right.
And but the doctor convinced me to have a chest x-ray, which I had not had for many eons. He finally talked me into it. And now I'm glad I did, because he came back saying, Henry, your lungs are fine. I said, I know. He says, but you won't believe this. He says, that disc of yours, that degenerated disc of yours, it's a miracle. It's actually restored itself. And I said, I believe it. And I'm grateful to hear it. And so what that tells me is that because I did make a commitment and that to change these things in my life and deal with them differently, that allowed my cells, when they reproduce themselves, to reproduce themselves in a healthy way rather than in an unhealthy way.
So the body can heal itself with the right attitude, the right life changes, allowing yourself to believe.
Well, it's programming in different instructions to the cells, because
right. Mm-hmm.
within a year's time, 98% of the cells in our bodies have reproduced themselves. But they'll reproduce themselves according to the old programming, whatever that is.
Oh, very interesting.
And part of that's useful. I mean, that's why if I know somebody and I haven't seen them for a year, I still recognize them. You know, they still have the same features.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if they have a programming inside themselves that's going to contribute toward illness of some kind, that's more likely to come up and be created.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if that issue is dealt with and there are more positive messages going through the neuropeptides, the instant messaging system in the body, going into the cells, they're more likely to heal or be healthy and happy.
That's wonderful. And you also describe muscle testing from
applied kinesiology. Theology.
Yes, from applied kinesiology as
uh-huh.
a way to get in touch with exactly what you believe or your inner truth. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, what we know at a simple level is that if you have a person extend their arm and resist you pushing it down, and you have them make a statement about what's the number of things that are obviously true and obviously false, like the color of your hair, the color of the shirt you're wearing, or what place, your location, you're in New York, you're in San Francisco, or whatever. And I find if you ask them to resist as much as they can on each one of them, you find that the arm would go strong when they know a statement to be true, and it goes weak when you know it to be false, no matter how strong they're resisting. And that gives us a clue that this can take place for things that we're not conscious of as well, like the obvious true and false. So if we could say there were severe traumas in your uterine life when you were in your mom's belly, or there were traumas in your first year of life, there are none at that time that are seriously affecting your health today. There were none at that time, and you do the muscle testing, and if there were, your arm becomes strong, and it gives us a clue to something that would not be consciously remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might be in the uterus, it was a time when there was a lot of conflict, or mom's mother was dying, or she was having fights with her husband, or a conflict about being pregnant, whatever it might be, the baby is picking up all that stuff in this new.
Even before being born, it's all
being
downloaded. These fears and these emotional traumas are being downloaded to that infant and affect us later in everything we do in our life.
Well, the good news is we're not stuck with that.
No.
The good news is that there are now tools that we can use with energy meridian stimulation of acupoints,
mm-hmm.
with statements of intentionality combined with it. I find it highly effective for clearing out that encoded information, which is a good way of thinking about it. It's just information that's encoded there, which can now be released.
Well, what I'd like to see happen is that parents expecting children and teachers and medical personnel dealing with children help to create the right environment so many of these problems will not exist down the road. You know, little children,
yes.
You know, little children, how they feel. They think their parents are perfect and they're gods. And so if they're treated poorly or neglected or don't have enough love, negative core beliefs come out of these negative conclusions, and
yes.
and then we think ourselves and other people in the world not there to be part of a good life, and we fulfill that destiny
yes.
that we have internalized. So, yeah.
Well, I feel like if we could just, this one thing I have a passion for, I'd like to see schools train teachers to do this little energy meridian tapping thing for children. They could have them take 5 minutes twice a week to privately focus on anything that's been disturbing, whether it's from a bully on the playground or parents fighting at home or whatever it might be, or pressure to achieve in school. Take 5 minutes to just go through rounds of this kind of tapping to clear that out so it doesn't accumulate, or to clear out the beliefs that they've come about themselves, like I'm no good, or I'm not good enough, or I have to be perfect, you know, I'm not lovable, or whatever it might be, and to clear those out. If that were done routinely, boy, I imagine people's whole lives would grow up very, very different.
That would be great. And when I was a teacher I had returned to teaching elementary school about 15 years ago before I became involved in this healing energy work. Mm. And when I walked into the building, there were 2,000 students in this school, and the energy there was so toxic, I could barely walk through it.
Wow.
And at that time, I would get headaches, and I would have stomach aches. And at that time, I was not aware how to protect my energy because I'm a sensitive, mm-hmm. and it was all being imprinted on me. And all I could see were so many damaged children. And I had taught years before that, and things had amplified and increased. So I also teach people how to use that technique with the arm, how to close down their energy points, how to strengthen their system. So when they go into any environment where there's too much energy overload or toxic events happening, that they will not be affected by it. They'll be able to be grounded and stand strong against it. It's a very similar concept.
But sure. Henry, and also, in addition to that, those are useful too, that you're talking about. And in addition to that, if we just focus on compassionate thoughts for people or thoughts of people other we have those for, that instantly protects us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's amazing. Suddenly the whole, if you test the arm, suddenly the arm becomes so incredibly strong that you could almost swing from it like a monkey, and even though it's a person, it's not very strong.
That's very interesting. And Henry, in your book, Use the Body to Heal Your Mind, Using the Body to Heal Your Mind, you offer several procedures or rituals for self-healing, for healing a bone spur, second-degree burn, healing hemorrhoids, a torn meniscus, knee injury, skin cancer. And I would like you to just pick one and give our listeners an idea of what they need to do with that one item.
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure you don't have the barriers in place. That's where the six questions come in first, because then the healing ritual may not be as effective if we use that first and we still got barriers. It'd be like trying to sail a boat with anchors holding it back.
Right.
So we need to attend to those particular issues first. Then we might need to have a ritual of some kind to focus our consciousness so we're giving different instructions to the body for healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of one simple thing, as I might just mention, is that I had a bone spur. The doctor said I would need on my heel. The doctor said it needs to be removed surgically. And I thought, since I had success with my back and other things, I'd try self-healing first. And I asked myself the questions, and I got to what it was about and made a commitment to deal with those differently. Then I realized I maybe needed to have a ritual to keep my consciousness focused toward that healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a few weeks to get one. And one day I was, after I showered and I was getting dressed, I walked around in my bedroom and I felt the carpet under my feet. And it felt so good. And all the little bones were flexing as I walked. I've got it now.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to take 5 minutes every morning as I'm getting dressed just to walk around on the carpet in my bedroom.
And consciously feel the healing. The bones.
Well, consciously imagine that all those little bones are flexing, and as they're flexing on that carpet, the blood flow is increasing, and the blood flow is going in there, taking the bone spur away and processing it out. And within another few weeks, I gradually did that. It just totally went away. I didn't have to.
And that's what I
say. And I correct my own language here. It did not go away. I gave it different instructions to what to do.
Yes.
And that's the way we need to think. I'm using the language that's typically used in medicine. It went away.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
But that's not the language we need to use, because that means I'm a victim and I'm powerless and had no effect. It just happened to happen by itself.
And that's what goes on, Henry, in a Reiki session. We are releasing toxins and tensions and improper thinking, and allowing new thought and the cells to reprogram and regroup and and move forward towards healing. I want to thank you, Dr. Henry Grayson, for sharing a true vision of healing and also a very wonderful, simple, and practical approach to wholeness that covers both techniques of science and spirituality to arrive at the most dynamic approach to life and health. It is the use of the mind and the body, spirit and physical being to heal, to love, and to expand self. And then the world becomes alive with creative action and awareness personally for us. Please go to henrygrayson.com to find out more about what has been discussed here today. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, I would like to read a short passage from Dr. Grayson's book. When we engage in self-healing, our bodily symptoms, a much greater healing is taking place in the process. By first identifying and then clearing our barriers and then beginning to regularly monitor our thoughts and question any false beliefs that lead to or keep us sick, we are healing the mind that so often needs to make the body sick. As we heal the mind by taking back our innate loving power, we begin to heal our faulty sense of separateness from all that is. We also begin to own our true self-identity, which is the ultimate purpose behind all healing, to leave behind the illusion of separateness, which is the basis of all suffering of mind and body. In those words by Dr. Grayson, we may discover the reason for our life and our individualized life plans and find the way back to our inner being, which can offer us the soul wisdom to have a healthy life experience. The choice for well-being and prosperity is within everyone's reach when they remember who they are and value themselves just as they are. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing from Within, and please go to my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about the nature of self, healing, love, and the human and divine connection.